Welcome into episode 140 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR podcast network. The Sources Say podcast is presented by our good friends at Justice Dental. You can make an appointment at one of two Lexington locations. That's on Wellington Way and Blazer Parkway. Now is a great time to schedule your dental cleaning. Remember that regular dental appointments are important for your overall health. You can learn more and make an appointment at justicedental.com. Dr. Justice and Dr. Thompson look forward to seeing you soon. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined once again by the one and only Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. Sean, how the heck are you?
Fantastic, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're rocking and rolling with this podcast. We've been doing pregame and postgame shows and little analysis here and there about how things are going with this season, the ins and outs, the statistics, the analytics, everything that you guys need to know to stay up to date with your beloved Kentucky Wildcats. We just wrapped up Kentucky's winning podcast over Vanderbilt, how that happened, everything that went well for the Cats down in Nashville. And it's already, Sean, time to talk about the Volunteers. The Tennessee Volunteers are heading to Rupp Arena on Saturday, so we are recording this ahead of time to break down what we know about the Volunteers and how Kentucky could pull off the impressive home win over its bitter in-conference rival. So, Sean, let's get us rolling. What do we need to know about the Tennessee Volunteers?
They struggle to score points. That is the one thing that stands out if you've turned on the tape and watched Tennessee in recent weeks. They absolutely struggle to put the ball in the basket. But on the other side of that, they're second in adjusted defensive numbers in KenPom. So outside of LSU, who's number one, this will be another tall task for Kentucky to be efficient against offensively. But they're going to have an advantage this time. That LSU game with the injuries to Xavier and Ty being out, they had no idea who their point guard was. That certainly affected the way that game was played. This one, Kentucky knows what they're good at now and what they have success in, and that's going to give them a game plan to have some success. If Kentucky can get to 70 points Saturday, I think that they win this game. But if Kentucky's efficient offensively, they shoot it well, they get points in the paint, and they don't allow Tennessee to turn them over, I think Kentucky could win this game by double digits.
Well, it's definitely a possibility considering Kentucky's offensive numbers as of late are fairly unbelievable. In fact, we touched on it a little bit last show, but Cal, there's kind of this back and forth in the Vandy game of what happened when Cal went with his three-guard lineup and his three-big lineup, right? And there was this massive outrage on social media about what happened when Cal decided to go with three bigs and said he went with the Keon Brooks, Jacob Toppin, and Oscar Tshiebwe lineup there for a while. He even went in. There was a brief moment, I believe, he had Toppin, Collins, and Tshiebwe in together at the same time, and it was just almost comical how Kentucky's go. They jump out to a ridiculous start. Things go incredibly well. They roll out the. So I have the exact numbers. They open the game on a 9-2 run, spread that lead to 17-8, and then 11 points at 22-11. Then with 11:36 to go, Mintz gets subbed out for Bryce Hopkins, and that's the first three big lineup: Bryce Hopkins, Jacob Toppin, and Oscar Tshiebwe. And then that during that stretch, the Commodores go on an 11-0 run to tie the game at 22-22, and then Cal does his little mini platoon, subs out all three of those guys, puts back in the starters, and then Kentucky goes on a 14-0 run of its own and leads by as many as 16 before the half. So, Sean, it's very clear that when this team is clicking, when they are going guard heavy, it's very clear that this team is capable of putting up a ton of points, and that's exactly what they need against Tennessee. In fact, I was crunching some of the numbers recently. Sean, get this. The Wildcats are averaging, with its typical starting lineup of Xavier Wheeler, Ty Washington, Kellen Grady, Keon Brooks, and Oscar Tshiebwe, they are averaging 128.9 points per 100 possessions, Sean. And then when you replace Xavier with Davion Mintz, so essentially what we've been seeing the last two games, that three-guard lineup of Davion Mintz, Ty Washington, and Kellen Grady, Sean, they're putting up 149 points per 100 possessions. You take those guys out and you put in the three big lineup of Keon Brooks, Jacob Toppin, and Oscar Tshiebwe, Sean, they're putting up 35.3 points per 100 possessions. I mean, it's almost a 100-point difference in those two things whenever we go three bigs versus three guards, Sean. I think it's very clear at this point what is working and what is not for the Kentucky Wildcats.
Yeah, and that group that was healthy, take Wheeler out for the last two games and then throw in either Keon or Toppin at the four only, and they were plus 45 in those two games against Georgia and against Vanderbilt. And then against Georgia, that lineup didn't start the game. And they played that lineup of Toppin and Keon a couple of different times, or it's probably plus 50, plus 60 if they play them a little more together, or if they don't sub as much as they did against Vandy in the first half and then late in the second half. But, yeah, it's clear right now what's working, and which kind of brings you into, if Xavier Wheeler does play Saturday, do you start him? Do you bring him off the bench? And I don't know. It's one of those things where I don't know if it's a right answer or a wrong answer. I think it's just kind of an opinion or how you feel. Or you get one coach and he probably thinks one way. You get another coach and they probably think the other way. Or maybe these coaches have had experience with the same situation. I said today on Kentucky Daily that I think that they should bring Xavier off the bench for the first game or two and just roll with the lineup that's been playing. They've established a rhythm. Let Xavier play his way back into it, and then don't do anything to mess with the ingredients that's working right now. And then if Xavier goes in and he's playing well and he can play 27 to 30 minutes or his normal amount of production and time, then you do it. But if he's rusty, then you know what you've got with this lineup and you don't actually kill the flow that's been working so well. But I think that that's a challenge that Cal and the staff's going to have. But ultimately, I actually think that Cal will start him if he's able to go. I just don't know. I kind of just have a hard time really messing with something that is doing as well as it is right now. And then here's the other side of that. I see some people saying, well, Kentucky's not beat anyone. No, they haven't. Georgia's not very good. Vandy's not very good. Western's not very good. But the thing is they've been efficient in those games against those teams that aren't very good. I've seen some Kentucky teams in the past struggle to be efficient offensively against these same teams.
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers of those three. Playing this possibility of say you leave Xavier on the bench, let him kind of ease back in. Sean, that three guard lineup that they're rocking with right now, 149 points per possession. They have an adjusted margin per 100 possession of 47.9, which is very good. They're shooting an effective field goal percent of 64%, shooting 41% from three, a turnover rate of just 7%. So they're not turning the ball over either. Assist percent of 47%, defensive rebound percent of 82%. I mean, you go down the list, what's working right now is it's working very, very well. I think I'm right there with you. I think if it's one of those, if it ain't broke, don't fix it scenarios.
Well,
it's clearly working. I wouldn't mess up what's working quite well, honestly.
And it's not that I'm saying that Xavier Wheeler is not going to come in and play a ton of minutes. I'm just saying to get the game flow established, I think you go with what's been hot, because you know a player's been out. Let's say he plays Saturday. We do not know yet. So that would be almost two full weeks out of action until he's played. Like, there's going to be some rust there early in the game. There's going to be that moment where he wants to do maybe a little bit too much to get himself going. I think that just naturally it'd be easier to kind of let him come in, maybe at that first media timeout or after that first media timeout, put some pressure on the basketball, get a steal, make a play early in transition, hit an open shooter for an assist. And to me, though, it will be easier to break Xavier Wheeler back into action more so than it is to break a shooter back into action. A guy that can make a play on the defensive end or be disruptive on that on-ball defense or make a play for someone else. I think it'll be easy for him to work his way back in. I just think the game flow needs to be established with this lineup that's been playing so well, because if you throw Wheeler out there and there's some rust, that unit's not been on the floor together in 2 weeks, it could kind of get stagnant, and then you don't know how they recover the rest of the way. Like, it might hinder what has been doing so well. Let them keep that rhythm and then kind of work him in around it. And then at some point, let him take on his and resume his role as starting point guard.
Or, Sean, let's just play double devil's advocate. And
I know where you're going.
And let's talk about the beloved chaotic idea that, see, okay, if you recall, all summer long, what did you hear John Calipari talk about? Every radio interview he had, every time he went on TV, and every conversation he had, every single time he talked about it, he said, I want a four guard lineup. He said, we're going to have four positions that are guard positions. So this was back, I mean, 4 months ago. This was back, August, I believe it was. I want to play four perimeter players, basically like four guards. If you don't have guard skills, you can't be in one of those spots. If you can't be a driver or a creator, you turn it over too much, that's your responsibility to grow your skills. He wanted this entire time a four-out offense, and I went back and I looked at the advanced stats and the advanced lineups. Cal has only used that four-guard lineup that he preached so much one time. We have seen it one single possession, a potential lineup of Xavier Wheeler, Ty Washington, Davion Mintz, Kellen Grady, and Oscar Tshiebwe. I'm sitting here thinking, we're seeing what's working right now for Kentucky, and it's the three guards that have been out there right now, Davion Mintz, Ty, and Kellen Grady. Why don't we just add in Xavier to the fold? As Chin Coleman went on radio last night and said that exact same thing. He goes on BBN radio after the Cal show, and this was his exact quote. I think we should play four guards. And then he said, I like the three-guard offense for us because of the ball handling. So he's stressing what we've been stressing, that he likes being able to initiate, and he likes being able to move the ball up the floor and scoring and shooting opportunities. But then he says, it's a more lethal lineup when we have multiple guards on the floor. I want to see us play four guards. I want to see us play all four of them. I think that's a death lineup with Oscar and whoever else out there. So, Sean, that gets us to that next topic of why in the world don't we just say, screw it, let's just play our five best players that are playing as well as anybody in the country right now. Why don't you just put your five best players out on the floor and just let her rip?
And I think you're going to see it at some point. And Chin's comments on the radio show last night is the reason why I think you're going to see it. Because we know, Cal, it's been discussed, or Chin wouldn't have said it in public air. Because, you know, Cal's probably, if Cal didn't want to do it or didn't want to at least talk about it, he's probably thinking, why in the hell did you say that?
Yeah.
You know, because now the fans are going to do the whole, I want to see this. Are we going to see this? And that's what we're talking about today. It was in mailbag questions on my end today. It was in DMs. Everybody wants to know, like, can they do that? And it's not as much the death lineup from the three-point shooting aspect of it, because Wheeler isn't going to shoot an efficient clip from that distance. But when you add in a Davion Mintz that can shoot it, a Kellen Grady that can shoot it, Ty Washington can spread the floor and shoot it, Oscar acquires so much attention. It actually fits Xavier Wheeler, too, because he has all this space to operate and do some stuff off the bounce and get to the rim and all those things that makes him so good. Oscar Tshiebwe is the key ingredient, though. There are so many plays from that Vandy game the other night, Jack, where Kentucky got open looks on the perimeter. Davion Mintz hit a three in the corner off of a flex screen on the baseline, where Oscar required so much attention that Scottie Pippen Jr. got too far inside, being aware of the duck end, that Davion Mintz got an open three. Like, Oscar's a guy now that right now is requiring like six eyes on him at all times. You add in these four perimeter players, it's going to make it that much harder to defend him as well.
And I think it's interesting because Cal on his radio show, they asked him about that possibility. If you know, why don't you just go four guards? And he said, yeah, I'd like to. But at the same time, you got to worry about defense. We're in the SEC. You got to worry about, you know, how is your four going to guard some of the big monster guys that they have down low in the SEC? And I look at the roster that Tennessee is going to roll out on Saturday afternoon. Kennedy Chandler, 6 foot. Viscovi at 6'3". James, 6'6". Folky at 6'9". And their starting center at 6'8". Like, how can you look at that, and especially like Fulkerson at 6'9", playing that kind of stretch four slash kind of small ball four a little bit. I don't know how you look at that and feel like you can't take advantage of you know. I feel like Cal should be the aggressor in this and say, well, okay, yeah, we might have to defend you, but you also got to guard us. I think that's kind of the mindset I'm taking is, how are you going to guard Xavier Wheeler with three open shooters all around him and then Oscar Tshiebwe down low to be a ball magnet for rebounds? I think that is the secret sauce.
It's the, if you continue to score 80 and 90, does it really matter?
Right, exactly.
Like if you're doing that, and I'm thinking I would do it like this, and you don't have to stick with it. And I'm not saying that he has to do it. Would I like to see this, the four guard look? I would, just to see how it does, like experiment a little bit. Maybe you find something at certain stretches of the game that just puts so much pressure on the opponent. And let's say that they run this lineup out there. Whoever has to defend that lineup first is going to be at a significant disadvantage because, one, they don't have tape on it. Two, they've not prepared for it because you can't simulate it right now because you don't know what it looks like. And it would be on the fly. Let's say that they play 10 to 12 minutes of that first half tomorrow, and then you get a look at that lineup around the last of the first half. And you try it out for a stretch of 2 to 3 minutes, and you see how it does. And let's say you have some success with it. Well, then you don't necessarily have to start the second half with it, but you can go back to it again at some point, and maybe it just keeps the other team off balance. It's changing it up a little bit. You're going from having a key on there that you're not having to worry about as much, except in that mid-range game, maybe flying in for an offensive rebound. And now you're having to worry about a guy that you're closing out on beating you off the bounce. It kind of puts you in a position. Does Rick Barnes adjust and throw another wing player on there? And I just think that it kind of, I mean, you're playing chess a little bit, and you're trying to figure out what the next move is. And I think it would be worth looking at it. And maybe it's a lineup that gets 8 to 9 minutes a game on average. And it might be at that key moment in the game where you need a spark and you need a run. And that might be one of the combinations that work. Just add anything to your list of options to kind of try to help you win a basketball game.
Yeah, and I guess the counter to that is, well, we're already seeing that they're scoring 149 points per 100 possessions with their typical lineup. So, I mean, you don't need them to score 200 points per 100 possessions. But I do agree. You are initiating. You are being the aggressor in saying you need to combat us. You need to figure out a way to stop us instead of kind of, you know, playing defense on the way Cal's mindset is on it. I just, when you have this much talent, I just don't know why it'd be such a bad thing to just see what happens. I agree with you. Just see what happens. Experiment with it a little bit. I think this is a good test if you were going to do it against Tennessee, because they do play rather small. I think it would be a good chance for them to show that.
Well, and you get in a situation where, you know, foul trouble obviously is a bigger factor because you got that fourth guard on the floor and there's an opportunity to pick up a foul or two at a spot where it wouldn't be if you're running three guard rotation. But Oscar on the floor, let's say that Oscar gets in foul trouble. Do you automatically substitute with a Lance Ware or a Damian Collins in that size, or do you move like a Keon or a Toppin in there and then instill play a smaller lineup? Like, do you go Keon at the four, Toppin, and just kind of go that lineup? I don't know. Or do you stick with four guards and Keon or Toppin? I think these are all things that they have to decide on. And I don't know. Like, I would like to see it just to kind of see how it does. And it's one of those things where if you don't run it out there, the way that Mintz is playing, the way that Tata's playing, Grady, the way that Xavier was playing, you kind of owe it to yourself to at least throw it out there and maybe find something that is dynamic and really hard to guard. And if you just run it out there for 3 minutes a game, what it does then is the other coach has to spend so much more time in game prep preparing for that lineup that they might only see for a stretch of play. But when you do that, you're overloading this guy and this team going into the game, and it's giving them more to prepare for, which makes you harder to scout.
And, okay, now that we're talking crazy possibilities and you know, thinking of outside the box a little bit, hear me out, because when Shaedon Sharpe first arrived on campus, what was the first thing that Cal said about him that kind of stood out to him? Oh, I think he's grown. I think he's now 6'6". So if you want to, you know, introduce a guy and, you know, if you have him at that small ball four as a 6'6", 200-ish pound small ball forward, where you stick him exclusively on the perimeter, don't have to worry too much about defense, because he's not going to be – there's not fewer chances for him to get beat off the dribble and things like that if he's guarding a small ball four or a stretch four where they have to combat him as opposed to him combating the other team. I think that could also be something that they – maybe not currently, obviously, but something that you think about down the road as a, all right, well, if you really just want to do a – I'm going to throw 100 haymakers and go for the knockout punch every time we play these teams. That would be one hell of a way to do it, is by throwing him in with that same group or something of the like. I don't know. That's just, I was just thinking that off the top of my head when we were talking about size and kind of that differentiating size versus skill and where to utilize both things.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I'm sure that when people listen to this podcast, we're going to have people that agree and think that they should run a four-guard look. They should run Shaedon Sharpe at some point in that lineup. And maybe that's a combo that you see. Kentucky's entering a stretch of games right now that are just brutal. I mean, you're talking a stretch of play that if they could find a way to go 4-1 in these next five, I think they could play their way into the two-seed talk. And if they get wins at Kansas and Auburn, then you're starting to talk, okay, maybe this team is on the cusp of playing their way into a one seed if they finish strong, because then they're starting to get a resume. It's going to be a tough stretch to maybe work Shaedon into, but I could see maybe getting through this stretch and then kind of looking at that Vandy, South Carolina, and maybe that's when you get a look at it. He's been on campus then for 3 weeks. He's got a chance to practice, probably in better shape, and you might get a look at it then. It's going to be hard for Cal to have the confidence to kind of throw a fresh guy out there for the next five. This stretch is going to be brutal.
Yeah, and that hypothetical was definitely something that's like way down the road, just thinking
it would be. It's February, honestly.
Yeah, that's dream scenario. If everything unfolds the way you want it to, that's something that, you know, if you're going to throw out the four-guard lineup, having a guy like Shaedon in there would be the perfect complement for that if you were going to do that. I think that's the better way to put it, instead of why not try it.
And I just think that this team as it is right now, is one of the more difficult teams to prepare for in college basketball when you're approaching it from a defensive standpoint, because they have Oscar, who is just dominating college basketball right now, and he's doing it in more ways than just the glass. Like, okay, it was cool to talk about in November when coaches are like, man, you can't keep him off the glass. Well, now you can't keep him out of the scoring column, and it's not because he's rebounding the ball. Mm-hmm. It's because he's hitting 15-footers. He's finishing with his left and right hand. He's dunking the ball. That right there is hard enough to prepare for. And then I think at the top of the scouting report right now, you go Oscar Tshiebwe at the top of the board. And I think the second name on the board is Kellen Grady. And here's why: you can't leave him.
Yeah.
Like, if he goes and gets hot on you and hits six or seven threes, you're not beating Kentucky regardless of how well you're playing. And then you throw in what Ty's doing and all these other things. I think Kentucky's a very difficult team to prepare for as is. If they could throw in one to two more things, like a four-guard look for here and there, it makes them that much more difficult to prepare for and more dynamic, in my opinion, just because other coaches are having to waste time and use time in practice and game prep to prepare.
Well, what has been Cal's measuring stick for a team's potential for greatness kind of throughout the entire time he's been here in Lexington? His measuring stick has been, if you have four players capable of scoring 25 points on any given night, you're capable of making a run in March, because you don't have to rely on any one player to, you know, sink or swim you. If last year, if BJ Boston or Terrence Clark or Olivier Saar went cold, then you had nobody on the team that was able to, survive without them. This team, you have guys that have scored 25-plus points. You have guys capable of doing that. You know that Ty is capable of doing that. Xavier has done that. Oscar Tshiebwe has done that. Kellen Grady has done that. You could just go down the list, and there's more. I mean, then you look at, like we said, dream case scenario, Shaedon Sharpe's down there on the bench. I think Keon has scored as many as 18, 20 points. There are so many scoring options on this team it's just really tough for any opposing team, like you said, the game plan and just the way that the numbers are backing up what the eye test is showing right now. This team is the most efficient scoring offense when playing the right guys. It's the most efficient scoring offense in college basketball. And I think that's why you can start dreaming big a little bit. And that's why I do think, even considering how difficult this run is moving forward, I do think that they are capable of going, you know, winning 5 of 6 or whatever you need from them.
And right now, if you ask me to, like, defensive efficiency, I know they're 23rd in KenPom. That's going to go up the minute Xavier Wheeler gets back, because he's going to add something to that end of the floor for sure. And if you ask me which one I'd rather be more efficient in right now, and I know defense, the motto is defense wins championships, and it does. When you defend at a high level, it gives you a chance. But when you're efficient offensively and you can score points, you put so much pressure on teams. And you could, even if it's one of those games where they muck it up and they try to make it ugly, like, you can still score points. You can still hit shots. You can get to the free throw line and do some things there. And that's where I think that I'm having a lot more confidence in this team being a team that can really challenge for a final weekend of the NCAA tournament because of that offensive efficiency, because the defensive efficiency, it might not get to top 5 or 6 or 7, but it's by the time we get to the NCAA tournament, I expect them to kind of settle in somewhere there around middle of the teens, maybe 10 to 15, 14 or 15, somewhere through there.
Well, what is that stat that if you have a top 15 offensive and defensive efficiency rating in the KenPom, every champion in the last 20 years or whatever it was has fit that criteria?
It might be, I think it's top 20 in both.
Top 20,
is
right.
Is what it is. Top 20, if I'm not mistaken. And they're right there, and they have been there for the last few weeks. And then, obviously, the last couple of weeks, the defense efficiency has gone down. It's 23 last time I looked, and offense, I believe, was 8th or 9th, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I know they're 8th overall in KenPom, but those are both right there in that ballpark of being one of those handful of teams that can win the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. I mean, it's – The proof is in the pudding. The numbers are there. And I think the last thing that fans need to see right now is, it looks good on paper when they're winning. They've won every single game by double digits this season, that they've won the game. They've won by at least 12 points this year. So you're beating the teams that you should beat, but you're also not – you don't have the resume-building wins quite yet. And I think that's what fans are waiting for, as that last kind of – patient move of, okay, now I can think that this team is a real contender in college basketball. If Kentucky can win on Saturday against Tennessee, if they can beat Auburn on the road, you know, go down the list. If they can start racking up those type of wins, I think that's when the big time dreams start to kind of settle in as potential reality.
Well, every Kentucky team that you feel good about getting to a Final Four, even the ones that haven't there, they all had those moments in the season where they go through a stretch of play where you're like, all right, this team has answered they've answered the bell. We now know that they're good enough to get to a Final Four, to that Elite Eight, and play their way into a Final Four. You had it with the team that didn't get to play in the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago. They had that stretch of road play at Arkansas, at Texas Tech. They had the road win at Florida to close the year. That's all that this team right now is missing. I think the offensive efficiency, the way that they're so lockable right now, the fan base is like, okay, this is a team that is definitely in that second weekend. You win a game or two here in this stretch on the road in one of these top 10 venues, and then the fan base is going to say, all right, this team can get to a Final Four and have a legitimate shot to win a national championship.
Yeah, I think that's the big dream. I think that this is the first big test here. That fans are going to really start to buy in with the hype, and it's going to be exciting. I wish would be able to be there, but Zach Gagan and I are heading up to Massachusetts for the Hoop Hall Classic, and it's going to kind of transition a little bit into recruiting talk on this show. We're going to do a lot of the same game recaps, and we did the pregame show. Now we're going to do a post-game show afterward, but we're also going to pump out a couple recruiting things as well. So plenty of awesome content coming up there, Sean. Any last thoughts that you need to get off your chest, overwhelming predictions, takeaways, things like that before we say our goodbyes?
Well, I said that I thought Kentucky could win this thing by 10 to 15, and then if that's what I'm going to stick with. I'm going to say Kentucky wins by 12 to 13. on Saturday. And hey, right now I've been pretty good at predictions, right? I said that they would win by 12 at Vandy, and they won by 12 at Vandy. I said Shaedon Sharpe would wear number 21, and look, God, he's wearing number 21. So right now I'm going to try to make it 3 for 3 and say Kentucky wins this thing. But no, just stay tuned to this podcast feed. I will be on the post game show for Tennessee, and then we'll do some stuff for Texas A&M, and just stay locked in with us, because Jack and I've talked about 3 weeks ago, and we come up with a big plan for this podcast, and you're already starting to see that take shape, and definitely excited to see where this goes.
Yeah, guys, the numbers, they're unbelievable right now. I think the consistency is starting to get there, and I think that the numbers are starting to spike as a result of it. So I appreciate all of you guys for sticking around with us and hearing our post-game coverage and pre-game coverage to kind of give you an in-depth look at these teams, because I know, you know, I love the KSR pregame show, and I love what they're doing at UK. I know that they do they're successful in their own individual ways, but I there were some times that I was sitting there thinking, man, I wish that there was an in-depth X's and O's kind of breakdown of the teams before they happen, after the games, how the games unfolded, how the wins or losses unfolded, things like that. And I think that's what we're providing here on the Sources Say podcast. So I am grateful for you guys following along. The numbers are showing it, that you guys are enjoying it. So I appreciate all of that. With that, let's get out of here with one final note from, again, our friends at Prize Picks. The NBA season is well underway, and there isn't a better way to enjoy watching your favorite former Wildcats play than by playing daily fantasy with our friends at Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the simplest form of real money daily fantasy sports, and just pits you against the numbers. Whether you're a fantasy sports nut or a casual basketball fan looking to add some excitement to the games, Prize Picks is the perfect game for you. You simply select 2 to 5 players and predict if they will go over or under their projection. Prize Picks gives you the chance to win 10 times your money for getting 4 or 5 predictions correct. You can have picks across sports as well. The NFL playoffs are here. They are here this weekend. So please capitalize on this. Add in some of those players to your picks with their over-under projected receiving, rushing, or passing yards. Download the Prize Picks app or visit prizepicks.com and sign up using promo code PILGRIM, that's P-I-L-G-R-I-M, to get an instant 100% bonus up to $100 on your first deposit. Don't forget, that's Prize Picks app or prizepicks.com and promo code PILGRIM to claim your bonus today and take your viewing of your favorite former Kentucky stars to the next level. Sean, let's get the heck out of here. Where can fans find your work?
You can find my work at gobigbluecountry.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at GBBCountry.
You can find me on Twitter as well at JackPilgrimKSR. Reach out to me via email at jpilgrim@kentuckysportsradio.com. Thanks again to Justice Dental. We appreciate you. Shout out Prize Picks as well. I appreciate everyone listening. We'll be back here, we'll say, in the next day or two for our recruiting coverage at the Hoop Hall, and again our post-game coverage after the Tennessee game. Hopefully things turn out well with that. We'll be back then for another jam-packed Sources Say podcast. We will see you then.